Chapter 8. Relief. The January water was icy, and the correspondent reflected immediately that it was colder than he had expected to find it off the coast of Florida. This appeared to his dazed mind as a fact important enough to be noted at the time. The coldness of the water was sad. It was tragic. This fact was somehow mixed and confused with his opinion of his own situation, so that it seemed almost a proper reason for tears. The water was cold. When he came to the surface, he was conscious of little but the noisy water. After that, he saw his companions in the sea. The oiler was ahead in the race. He was swimming strongly and rapidly. Off to the correspondent's left, the cook's great back stuck out of the water, and in the rear, the captain was clinging with his one good hand to the keel of the dinghy. The shore seemed very attractive, but the correspondent knew that it was a long journey, and he swam leisurely. The life belt lay under him, and sometimes he slid down the incline of a wave as if he were sliding down a snowy hill. But finally, he arrived at a place in the sea where travel was difficult. He did not pause from swimming to inquire what current had caught him, but there his progress ceased. The shore was set before him like a bit of scenery on a stage, and he looked at it and understood each detail. As the cook passed, much farther to the left, the captain was calling to him.
"Turn over on your back, cook! Turn over on your back and use the oar!"
"All right, sir."
The cook turned on his back and, swimming with an oar, went ahead as if he were a canoe. At this point, the boat also passed to the left of the correspondent, with the captain clinging one hand to the keel. He would have appeared like a man raising himself to look over a fence if it were not for the extraordinary twists and turns of the boat. The correspondent wondered how the captain could still hold on to it. They passed on, nearer to shore, the oiler, the cook, the captain, and following them went the water jar, bouncing happily over the seas. The correspondent remained in the grip of this strange new enemy, a current. The shore, with its white slope of sand, green bluff, and little silent cottages, was spread like a picture before him. It was very near to him then, but he felt like he was in a gallery looking at a scene of Brittany or Algiers. He thought, "Am I going to drown? Can it be possible? Can it be possible?" Perhaps an individual must consider his own death to be the final phenomenon of nature. But later, a wave pushed him out of this small, threatening current, for he suddenly found that he could again make progress toward the shore. Later still, he was aware that the captain, clinging with one hand to the keel of the dinghy, had his face turned away from the shore and toward him and was calling his name.
"Come to the boat! Come to the boat!"
In his struggle to reach the captain and the boat, he reflected that when one suffers exhaustion, drowning must really be a comfortable arrangement. He would be glad for the end of his struggles, for the main thing in his mind had been the horror of the temporary pain. He did not wish to be hurt. Then he saw a man running along the shore. He was undressing with remarkable speed. Coat, tie, shirt, everything flew magically off him.
"Come to the boat," called the captain.
"All right, captain."
As the correspondent swam, he saw the captain let himself down to the bottom and leave the boat. Then the correspondent performed his one little marvel of the trip. A large wave caught him and threw him with ease and supreme speed completely over the boat and far beyond it. It struck him as a true miracle of the sea. An upside-down boat in the surf is not a toy to a swimming man. The correspondent arrived in water that reached only to his waist, but his condition did not allow him to stand for more than a moment. Each wave knocked him down, and the undercurrent pulled at him. Then he saw the man who had been running and undressing and running, jump into the water. He dragged the cook onto the shore and then waded toward the captain, but the captain waved him away and sent him to the correspondent. He was naked above the waist, but a halo was around his head, and he shone like a saint. He gave a strong pull, a long drag, and a big lift at the correspondent's hand. The correspondent said, "Thanks, old man." But suddenly the man cried, "What's that?" He pointed a swift finger. The correspondent said, "Go!" Face down on the beach lay the oiler. His head touched sand that was periodically, between each wave, clear of the sea. The correspondent did not know what occurred later. When he arrived at safe ground, he fell, striking the sand with each part of his body. It was as if he had dropped from a roof, but he was grateful for the fall. It seemed that instantly the beach was crowded with men with sheets, clothes, and bottles of wine. The women came with coffee pots and all the treatments known to them. The welcome of the land to the men from the sea was warm and generous, but a still and drenched shape was carried slowly up the beach. The land's welcome for the oiler could only be the dark and lonely grave. When it came night, the white waves paced to and fro in the moonlight, and the wind brought the sound of the great sea's voice to the men on shore, and they felt that they could then be interpreters.